Thanks a lot for the invitation. Special thanks to Alicia and Mark for inviting me and organizing this wonderful conference. So I'd like to report on some work we've been doing over the last three or four years with different collaborators, the main one being Steve Hsu, but it involved Roberto Casadio and two of my PhD students of Volker Kuipers and Marco Sebastianuti more recently. So as the talk is short and I have a lot of things to tell you, I may not get to all of it. So here's a take-home message. So basically, we have identified quantum gravitational corrections to the external metric of compact objects. And these corrections are sensitive to the interior metric. So that's a new kind of quantum error. So we've been able to apply these results to black holes. And this has given us some intuition of how to use this quantum error to find a solution to the information paradox. So the other thing which I think would be very interesting to the audience is that using EFT methods, we're able to calculate these quantum corrections and we can show how they feed back into Hawking amplitudes and the emission spectrum. And we can basically show that the black body spectrum gets corrections and doesn't match that of a black body anymore. And I'll basically flash a couple of slides at the end to show you that if I have time. Okay, how do I change slides now? Oh, here we go. So thanks to previous speakers, I don't have to spend too much time here. The framework I'm using is called Unique Effective Action. It's very similar to what you heard before. There are some subtle differences that I can't discuss because of time constraints here. But we basically start from Einstein's gravity. We integrate out the graviton and any other massless field and obtain an action that is to leading order in curvature. The leading order deviation from GR in curvature represented here. I'll be calling this part local part of the action and the part of the log box non-local. The term non-local is rather unfortunate. It's just, there's nothing weird or real non-locality. It's simply because you integrate out massless particles and the mu's are renormalization scales here. So that's the framework we're using. It is obviously non-renormalizable, but as you've heard before, and that's something that matches the talks you heard before, there is a part of the action that is actually calculable from first principles. And that is independent on the UV complete theory of quantum gravity. And that's the beauty of the approach. So those are the coefficient of the so-called non-local part of the action. And depending on what you integrate out, scalar, fermion, vector, gravitons, the coefficient, the Wilson coefficient takes certain values that I've represented here in this table for you. Now, the price to pay, because we don't have a UV complete theory, is that we cannot calculate the Wilson coefficient of the local part of the action. So for example, R squared, or R mu here, you would have to match your EFT to some UV complete theory. And that's doable if you adopt a certain UV theory, but that's the price to pay. We're going to remain agnostic about the UV completion and simply work within this framework. And actually, I will show you that many of the results we're obtaining are completely independent on the unknown part of the action, and they solely depend on the non-local part. So, as an exercise, and also that's what gave us intuition of the quantum error, we can look at a simple application, which is to calculate quantum correction to a static star. So when we vary the action I've shown you, you're going to get a GR part of the field equations, and you get a correction that is due to the non-local part of the action, the local part of the action, and one that is due to the non-local, and you have your T-mu on the right-hand side. So that's where you put your model. So here, the model we're looking at is a static star. So it's basically a dust ball that has constant density inside the radius RS, and there's nothing outside. So the classical, that is the solution to this part of the equation, is well known, and that's the interior Schwarzschild metric, and the mass is given by the Misner-Sharp mass. The exterior one is the usual Schwarzschild solution. Again, that's very well known. So what we do is to calculate in perturbation theory quantum corrections around the classical metric. And after some calculations that are not very difficult in the end of the day, once you get used to it, we obtain the following results. So that's the usual GR result. And we get this correction that depends only on the non-local part of the action. Now, what's interesting here is this term. So this term that goes as r to the minus 5, if you multiply things out, is proportional to Gn, so Newton's constant squared, the mass of the black or of the star at this point, over the radius of the star to the 3. So that's a quantum gravitational correction that is proportional to the density of the source. And that's an indication of a quantum hair that depends on the interior of the source. So that's interesting, but not yet very convincing if you want to think about black holes. So recently, we reinvestigated this problem and looked this time at a collapse dependent model, so the Oppenheimer-Snyder model. And the calculations are more involved, but they boil down in the end of the day to replacing RS by RS of T. And we can show that throughout the collapse, the curvatures remain weak, so everything is well under control. And a decent observer can track these R to the minus 5 corrections in principle during the totality of the collapse. So at some point, your radius will reach 2GNm, so the Schwarzschild radius. And you can argue that you would have formed a black hole, so either through the closed trap surface or just a Hooke conjecture. So in principle, this distant observer can measure the coefficient of r to the minus 5. So that's a correction to the potential, to Newton's potential. So that information, or that correction, contains information about the distribution that collapse into the black hole. So you can, in principle, differentiate between black holes that were formed by different matter distributions. So that is really the pointer the intuition we had, that the quantum hair that we've found could have something to do with the evaporation of black holes. So what I've told you now is in perturbative theory. Let me try to formalize things a little bit and make some statements about the non-perturbative nature of the problem. So I would like you to think about a compact source, and it has energy eigenstates with eigenvalues E. And I want to try to write down the graviton quantum state psi g of E, and think of this in analogy to what we have for U1 field in QED, so the Coulomb potential that is created by a charge Q. So you know that in QED, the coherent state is given by this expression, where here you have the charge Q, B dagger is a linear combination of creation operators of the non-propagating, so that is the temporal and longitudinal modes depending on the gauge of the photon. And gravity, the main difference is that you're replacing T by the energy eigenvalue of the source. And the coherent state modes are temporal and longitudinal modes of the graviton. So the take-home message here is that both in gauge theories and in gravity, the asymptotic state is fixed by Gauss's law via constraint quantization. So let's write down now this object for gravity. So we have psi g of E. Now, I hope you can still see this line. It's cut on my screen. I don't know why. But anyway, hopefully you can see it.
Yes, we can see.
Okay, great. Thank you. Psi g of E depends on the energy E, and each distinct energy eigenstate of the compact source has a different graviton quantum state. So semi-classical matter distribution, you can think of as a superposition of energy eigenstates with where the support is concentrated in some narrow band of energy, and we can write it as psi equals sum over n, cn, psi n, and psi n are the energy eigenstates with eigenvalues en. So the resulting state we're getting for the graviton is a superposition state given by psi g, which is sum of n, cn, psi g of e of n. So in QED, the long wavelength photons that couple to the total charge of the composite object, in gravity, the corresponding gravitons coupled to the energy eigenvalue of the compact source. So basically, we find that a semi-classical compact source produces external graviton states that are complex proposition given by psi of g here. And what I've shown you with the star is an example of this generic result. Now, I apologize to the experts. I know that many of you are familiar with the Hawking paradox, but in case you're not, I want to give a very brief summary of what it is and then present our approach to it. So basically, Hawking discovered that black holes are emitting particles of famous radiation, and eventually they evaporate. And he came to the conclusion that they can destroy quantum information. So basically, black holes would cause pure states to evolve into mixed states. Now, this formulation is a little bit tricky to track and to track the different steps of it. The most precise and better one I'm aware of goes back to Mature. And his formulation is very clear because the assumptions are extremely clear. So he tracks the entanglement entropy of Hawking radiation that is emitted on an ice slice. So the idea of an ice slice, you think of space-like surfaces that intersect both the interior of the black hole and the emitted radiation. The reason why he does that is that you can avoid all discussions of strong gravity. Gravity is very weak there. So basically, it's a clean way to know exactly what you're doing when you're deriving the information paradox. So let me very briefly review his formulation. So I'm going to use his notation for those of you familiar with beautiful papers. You have the pair of particles that he's emitted. The one that is created outside the horizon is B. The one that is inside the horizon is E. So we're going to have B1, B2, and so on and so on. These will be as those emitted outside. E1, E2, and so on. Those are those emitted inside. So we think of the nice slice. So it's a nice slice radiation that contains only the matter state psi m. So that's the black hole, and none of the quanta that are emitted EI and BI. So think of it this way. You first have the black hole that stands there. Then it emits the first pair of quanta. So the modes are E1, B1. And you now have a new slice. And you can write down the state for this object using the occupation number convention as 1 over square root of 2, 0 E1, 0 B1, plus 1 E1, 1 B1. So the entanglement of the state is straightforward to calculate. So basically, you're going to get log of 2. Then these particles move away. You create new particles, B2 and E2. They move away, you create new particles, B3 and E3, and so on and so on. So after n step, your quantum state psi m is given by the state of the black hole. Then you have the first particle emitted, the second particle emitted, the third one, the fourth one, and so on until the nth one. So the initial state appears as a tensor product. And that really is the crux and the major assumption he's making with all the other quanta. So the pair creation happens far away. And so you can basically split your state as a tensor product. There's no connection to the matter state in the leading order Hawking process. So if you calculate now the entropy of this system, so you have the BI mode that are entangled the EI mode and the black hole, and that gives you an entropy of N times log 2 for N emissions. And every succeeding emission will grow by, so the entropy will grow by log 2 with each succeeding emission. So at some point, your black hole has evaporated completely. The BI quanta outside will be in an entangled state, but there's nothing for them to be entangled with. So you have a pure state psi m that has evolved into a mixed state that is now described by a density matrix. Now, Mature is a very smart guy, and he knows that what he's saying here is not entirely kosher, and you're going to get some corrections from quantum gravity, and he calls them epsilon. So these corrections, he denotes them by epsilon, and they will be a small effect according to him. So the entangled entropy actually won't increase by log 2, but by log 2 minus epsilon with each emitted quantum. And he then argues that they're irrelevant in the big picture, you still have a problem. So what he's assuming here, though, is that there's a semi-classical space-time background. And what I'm going to tell you in what follows is that with this formulation, one does not address the possibility of entanglement between different background geometries, so gravitational states. So I will argue that black holes and their geometry and the Hawking radiation form what is called a macroscopic superposition. And that's the key novelty, I would say, in this approach. So what do we have to work with? So we have two pieces of information. We have the first one, the asymptotic graviton state of an energy eigenvalue, source is fixed to leading order by the energy eigenvalue. And you can express this explicitly as a coherent state that now depends on its eigenvalue. Now, there's a very justified assumption here that there's no accidental degeneracy in the energy. So you can have a one-to-one map between the graviton state and the source, the matter source. Now, unless you have symmetries, it's a very, very well-founded assumption. So semi-classical matter source produces an entangled graviton state. And then we have the quantum hair. So the quantum gravitational fluctuations, so graviton loops, will produce corrections to the long-range potential. So I've shown you an example at r to the minus 5. And these coefficients depend on the internal state of the source. So in the case I've shown you, the density. So this is an example, an explicit example of how the graviton quantum state and the corresponding semi-classical potential encodes or can encode information about the internal state of the black hole. Now, what is interesting here and annoys a lot of people who work in string theory, notably, is that I haven't requested to know the UV complete theory. Everything here is done with low energy quantum gravity, so long wavelength gravitons. So here's our resolution. So we think of the black hole radiation this way. Using the two properties that I've just discussed, we write a quantum state of the exterior metric. So that's basically the quantum state of the exterior geometry as psi I. And we write it as a sum of n Cn psi g En. And that's a sum of n Cn of the geometry that depends on En, so the metric of the geometry, as you want. So that's the exterior metric. So I'm going to suppress all quantum numbers just to make the expression trackable. So let me introduce my notation here. I'm assuming that the final state will look like R1, R2, or rather writing the final states R1, R2, R3, up to Rn. And by R, I mean a collection of all the quantum numbers you can think of. So delta I, that's the energy, Pi, the momentum, the spin I, Si, the charge Qi, and so on, or any other quantum number you may have. So the final radiation state, I can specify entirely by giving you R1, R2, up to Rn. I'm going to call alpha of E, Ri the amplitude for the emission of quantum Ri from the exterior metric state psi g of E. So to leading order, this is just a famous Hawking semi-classical result for a black hole of mass E. So I would like to make a few remarks on alpha E, Ri, so on this amplitude. So independently of what I've shown you with these calculations in using EFT, you can think there will be two types of quantum gravity corrections to the amplitude. It could either be a perturbative correction, so that's S to the minus K, so where S is the entropy, or E to the minus S for non-perturbative corrections or effects. So that's the worst case scenario, because this can be a very tiny number. So that's the motivation for Mature to think of epsilon as being very, very little. So what is important, though, is that the amplitude depends on these corrections. And the fact that the corrections can depend on the internal state of the black hole is, again, a consequence of this quantum hair we've introduced. Now, there's a very nice result that goes back to a decade or two ago now. These tiny corrections, even in the case of non-perturbative physics, exponential to minus s, are enough to purify a maximally mixed Hawking state. So that is, they can perturb the radiation density matrix rho, so that trace of rho squared equals one, because every time you're going to emit a lot of particles, you have a lot of geometries because you to sum over because your black hole is going to move around. And this basically, if your matrix is large enough, so your Hilbert space is large enough, you can compensate this tiny correction. This has been shown, and I think it's well appreciated by the experts that this is the case. So the epsilon of Mature can be large enough to compensate to lead to unitary evaporation.
Javier, so here you have 10 minutes. 10 minutes.
Sorry?
You have 10 minutes left.
Thank you. So here's a way of thinking of it. So we take a black hole, and as I described to you with Mature, we're going to first emit the first radiation. Let me call it R1. And it will evolve into an exterior state that we can write down as psi I. And that's a sum of n, cn, g of en. We emit the first particle, so the energy of the geometry basically reduces by delta. We have the Hawking amplitude, the amplitude, it's not the Hawking amplitude anymore because of this correction here. So we have alpha en comma R1. And then we emit so G again is the exterior geometry, and R1 is the radiation. And I remind you that with R1, we denote all the quantum numbers of the quanta. So it could be the spin, energy, momenta, and so on and so on. So then we emit the second particle, like I described to you with Mature. What we get is, so we had a sum of R1. We need to get a sum of R1, R2. We now have this new amplitude appearing here. So again, the energy of the black hole has gone down a little bit with the emission of the first quanta. So it's En minus delta 1, comma R2. And then we've lost another energy, so bit delta 2 with the emission of the second. So the exterior geometry now is, the energy of the exterior geometry is En minus delta 1 minus delta 2. And so you do that many times. You emit many, many, many particles until your black hole is gone. So you have the final state that I've introduced to you earlier. So the final state is going to be R1, R2, Rn, and that's pure radiation. And you have a sum of all the quanta you have emitted, and you have the amplitudes that are corresponding to the first emission, the second emission, the third one, and so on, until the nth one. So let me rewrite this state here so we can discuss it. So what is important about this? Well, the first remarkable feature is that it's not a tensor product, and you cannot write it as a tensor product. That's the crux. All the derivations that are trying to prove to you that there's a problem of Hawking radiation and unitarity rely on the fact that you can write your final state as a tensor product. We can't do that here because all of these amplitudes depend on the properties of the quanta that have been emitted. So the final state, we don't write down the black hole or the geometry because it's gone. It doesn't exist. There's no horizon as space-time is essentially flat. So the final radiation is a complex superposition. So the final radiation state, is a complex superposition that depends linearly on the initial black hole state. And that is basically a macroscopic superposition. Think of it this way. Your black hole will start to emit particle in all possible direction. If it emits particles in one direction, it's going to bounce back in the other. Then there's the next emission in that direction, it's going to bounce back in that one. So you are actually talking about not just quantum metrics and quantum effects, but there are actually macroscopic movements of your black hole. And by the time it has emitted all its particle, it has moved quite a bit. That's something, again, that is well understood in the literature. So this is really interesting. You are dealing with a macroscopic superposition state. Now, under time reversal, the radiation state evolves back to the original black hole quantum state. So you're able to rewind the movie here. So basically, the quantum hair provides a mechanism by which the amplitude E of R depends on internal state. And this result is manifestly unitary. So the final state is manifestly a pure state. So for each distinct initial state, there is a different final radiation state. And the time reverse evolution of this final radiation state gives you a specific initial state. So as far as I know, this is the first time that we have a physical picture of how information is encoded in Hawking's radiation. So how much time do you have, please?
5 minutes left.
Okay. Yep. So I still have a little bit of time to tell you about these most recent results. We have revisited Hawking's original calculation. So that it is, we start from the Schwarzschild background, and we've calculated the quantum gravitational corrections to the metric and to the amplitude. So I don't have time, obviously, to tell you much details, but here's the leading order correction to the metric we're getting for Schwarzschild. So that's the object or the corrections we're talking about. We can basically redo exactly Hawking's original calculation. And we use the Bogubov trick and do the transformation to identify or to calculate the amplitudes. And you see that the coefficient here, alpha and beta, are dependent on the correction to the metric. They appear here and here. So that basically tells you that the quantum error induces corrections to the amplitude for the production of Hawking radiation. Now, in the original calculation of Hawking, energy is not conserved. So, first of all, let me emphasize that this is the mechanism by which information escapes the black hole, right? I mean, you have the information that is in the amplitude of the radiation. In the original formulation of Hawking, energy is not conserved. Your black hole emits particle but doesn't lose mass, basically. And there's a nice way to take that into account. So to take energy conservation is a trick that goes back to Perrick, and we'll check that is absolutely beautiful. You can relate the problem to a tuning issue or tuning method. And we can basically follow their calculation again, calculate the quantum gravity correction. And in that case, the final result, and again, I knew I wouldn't have much time, so I just give you the final answer. But have a look at the paper if you're interested in the details. The final answer is that the emission spectrum is not that of the black body. You get two bits. That's the one that Perrick and Wilczek had obtained already, but we get the dependence on the quantum gravity here. So the information again about the interior state of the radiation of the black hole appears here. So basically, not only do Hawking amplitude depend on the quantum corrections to the metric, the quantum hair, but the power spectrum also depends on these corrections. And it does not match that of a black body anymore once you take energy conservation and quantum gravitational corrections into account. And basically, the alphas in our equations, so those are the alphas that I've talked to you about in our derivation of the information paradox solution, resolution, they're calculable in this EFT approach. Okay, so we have identified a new kind of quantum hair. I've presented generic expression for the quantum state of the graviton field. And we use these results to reconsider black hole radiation and the evolution. And I hopefully have convinced you that it's a unitary process. Now, we've calculated the leading order quantum gravitational corrections to these to the Hawking amplitude and spectrum. And we find that they deviate from the black body spectrum. Now, all of what I've told you only depends on very, very well-known physics. It's quantum field theory. It's low energy quantum gravity with EFT. So the only real assumption is that GR is the correct low energy theory, which I believe any decent UV completion must have. None of these details depend on the UV completion. Thanks a lot for your attention. So as I can't be with you, unfortunately, physically, if I can answer all your questions during the question time, please talk to my friend and collaborator, Steve, who's at Perimeter. Thanks a lot for your attention.
Thank you very much, Javier. So we are perfectly in time. Thank you very much, Javier. And we have 5 minutes for question. Either from, okay, we have already a question here from Abai.
Thank you for this very nice talk. Can you hear me?
Can you hear Javier?
No, unfortunately, I can't. Sorry.
Maybe the.
Okay, let's use this one.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, much better. Hi.
Yeah, okay. So thank you very much for this talk. I just wanted to point out one thing, that the imprint of the matter on the quantum state in the exterior, that is also encoded, if you like, at null infinity, at scry, in terms of what is called the mass aspect, or psi 2, in the distant past. So the star will determine that. And then as a flux of matter goes out, then psi 2 changes. And so there's a very nice description just along scry about what you're doing, and that is why the state is different, namely that you really have to take into account these various sectors, which are kind of unitarily equivalent with different psi 2s put together. And that is the consistent picture of what is happening at scry. And I think this is something that sort of several of us knew, but what your very nice work has done is to make it very explicit via these effective field theory calculations that you sort of said in the very beginning. Now my question was really the following, that I didn't quite read from your formulae, but in the Hawking effect, of course, as the mass shrinks, when the mass is, reaches near a million times Planck mass, for example, the temperature shoots up very much. Is that something that one can see here, or by then the state is so different from thermal state that you cannot see, you cannot really locate the temperature?
Basically, your question is, when can we trust EFTs, I believe?
Yeah.
And the previous work I have done shows that up to 10 times the Planck mass, these methods still work very well. And you can actually check the temperature.
Up to what? I didn't get up to what?
10 times the Planck mass.
Okay.
And up to that, everything is under control. But so basically, the last bit is when you have a quantum black hole, really, so where the mass is close to MP, so below 10 times MP. And in that case, obviously, we can't say anything, but all of the entropy is gone already, so we don't worry about this stage. So it's a final little bit.
But you ought to say that by then, most of the information or whatever, the state is almost pure.
It's gone already, so we don't have to worry about that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other question? Either here from the audience or on Zoom? I think it's not working.
Hello?
Okay.
It's working. Yeah. Okay. thank you for a great talk. My question was just whether with your calculations you have corrections to black hole thermodynamics, and whether like the area, if you perturb it, it still gives you an analogy. Okay.
So you do, and actually there's something quite interesting which I don't fully understand yet, but we do get a term that looks like pressure. And it is very interesting that it seems that when you start to calculate quantum gravitational corrections to the thermodynamics, you find the temperature, obviously, but there's a pressure term as well. So that's another work I couldn't review.
Nice. We have one question from online participant.
There is a question online. So can this new black body spectrum be compared with the spectrum of our Milky Way black hole?
I'm sorry, I haven't understood the question.
You can see the chat. So the question is, can this new black body spectrum be compared with the spectrum of our Milky Way black hole?
We can't observe, unfortunately, the Hawking radiation. So if we could, you could try to do something about that, but it's not something that is experimentally doable. It's not now.
Okay, I think it's a good time to maybe... Well, we have one very quick last question from here in the audience.
Hey, thank you for the very clear talk. So you said that you get these alphas in this process and that you can compute them?
That's right.
How do you compute those alphas?
Well, okay, so you have two... Sorry, again, I was very brief on this. I'm sorry, I knew I wouldn't have time for this. Basically, it boils down to redoing Hawking's calculation. So you basically look at the creation of a pair of quanta in the background of a black hole. So that's the first result I've shown you, and the amplitudes basically depend on the metric, the background metric,
Sorry, if I could be more specific. So clearly the alphas must depend on the state of the star that's, say, deep inside the interior on the nice slice. So how is that detailed state of the star affecting the computation of the alphas?
Well, that's what I meant. So you have the exterior metric, right? You could have corrections to the Schwarzschild metric. And these corrections will impact, will change your alpha and betas. And that's a very simple calculation, actually. I'm sorry, I don't have slides ready. I can only invite you to have a look at our paper for more detail. It was published recently in PhysRefD. But it's basically we're doing Hawking's calculation, and the key new ingredient there is that the background metric now depends on the quantum gravitational corrections, and this affects the amplitudes. And then if you want to impose energy conservation, you have to go beyond what Hawking did, and we use the trick of Wilczek and his collaborator, this beautiful trick, and you relate it to tunneling, and again, your background metric changes, and that affects the outcome, and you get a result that I was showing to you a few minutes ago.
Okay.
I invite you to read the paper for all the details. I'm sorry, I really, you know, there's nothing magical there, it's just we're doing the calculation in a different background.
We have maybe just 30 seconds comment by Stephen here.
Yeah, Xavier, just to clarify your response a little bit. So the issue might be that, so when we write the alphas, we're talking about the fully quantum mechanical energy eigenvalue of the source. And in that case, we can't obviously calculate. No, we can calculate in the case where you are looking at a semi-classical black hole. And in that case, you can calculate alpha. But then the E is not the actual energy eigenvalue, but it does show that the amplitudes do depend on the semi-classical mass of the black hole as it's shrinking. And for that, we use the Parikh-Wilczek method.
Okay, great. Yeah, so we will have more time actually for discussion during the open question time after the coffee break. So let's thank Javier again.